Good morning, everybody. So glad, as Brad indicated in his email, that we have order and structure back this weekend. It was a mess last week with the guys here by themselves. We had guys up here eating cookies, and it was just a disaster. So glad to have the ladies back with us this morning, and glad to see all of you. We're in the middle of a series called Wed 2.0, and that's where we're going to pick up today. We said that every one of you, every one of us has an opportunity to upgrade our marriage, to make our marriage something better than what it currently is. And so far, this is what we've talked about. We said we can upgrade our marriage by living out the gospel. And we talked about what the gospel looks like when it's lived out. Not just accepting the gospel, which I would love to think that all of you have at some point in your lives, but actually using it day to day because the Spirit equips us to live. And we talked about living the gospel. And then we talked about learning from others. So we have an opportunity to upgrade our marriage by connecting with other people. And hopefully some of that is taking place right here in Homefront. Well, we move on today to one that changed my life in a big way. And we're going to talk about this next attribute of taking care of your spouse in just a few minutes. But what's extra special about this morning is that I don't have to do it all by myself. So I wanted to take a moment to introduce our special speaker that's going to join us this week and then again in 2 weeks. This is the first time she's been up here, so I wanted to do it the right way. The Bible tells us that a wife is a gift from the Lord. And I will share with you that my bride is a tremendously wonderful gift from the Lord to me. I definitely married up, that's for sure. As I indicated to some of you a few weeks ago, it was my greatest sale, my greatest close ever out of my sales career to get this bride. But seriously, she is a wonderful woman. She has a lot of wisdom to share with you. I know that many of you, many of the women in here know her, and she has invested in you. And I'd like you to give a warm welcome to my bride, Bridget Goetz. So we're excited to be here together with you. And before we begin, I thought I'd share with you a little bit about the topic that we're going to talk about today. Oh, hold on, Brad. Hold on. Brad, that is because both are playing off of there. You still have the music going. Okay, so this is a perfect opportunity to say, we need an AV person. So I love Brad back there, and he's doing a fabulous job. But he's, he is. Well, I don't know if he's doing better than you, sweetie. But he is doing a nice job back there. But he's also multitasking, so we need an AV person to sit back there each week, so that the core team doesn't have to do that. So if any of you have the ability, it's actually not nearly as confusing as it looks once we train. Once we train you on it, it's a piece of cake. Just click a few buttons, adjust some volume for us. But if you can do that, that would be perfect. Now are we ready, Brad? Yeah. Excellent.
We'll see. All
right, here we go. There it is. Okay.
This is my anniversary gift?
Yep.
A vacuum cleaner?
Dual bag. This is the best vacuum cleaner you'll ever have, baby.
Get in there.
What? Not a big fan of that look. I gotcha.
Time immemorial. When men have messed up, they get sent here by their wives or girlfriends. Fold.
Yeah, but I don't deserve to be here. I didn't do anything.
Every man in the doghouse thinks he's innocent. Isn't that right, boys?
Look, all I know is that I got my wife this really nice gift, and then now I'm here.
What'd you get her?
This brand new dual bag vacuum cleaner, actually.
Hear that, boys? You got our vacuum cleaner.
You're a fool, man.
Oh, it was dual bag.
And Dualbag doesn't know why he's here.
I realize it's not the most romantic gift, but
there are many reasons a man can end up in here.
Hey, Dualbag. All I did was tell my wife that her mom looked hot in a bathing suit.
It was a compliment. I was just trying to be nice.
That's bull.
She was smoking. She was smoking.
I told my wife that staying home with the kids was a heck of a lot easier than having to actually work for a living.
See, a lot of guys end up in here during the holidays because they give their wives thoughtless gifts, like a vacuum cleaner.
I got my wife extra RAM memory for her computer as a gift. I even attached a note that said, "Thank you for the memories." It didn't go down very well.
That's Oscar. He's been here so long, his plane lost his mind. Legend has it he gave his wife a mustache waxer during the holidays.
What is that on your lip?
How do you get out?
It's real hard. I just got reviewed last week. I went up before this review board.
Let's review your offense.
Merry Christmas.
Seriously?
What? Thought you'd want to tighten up that jelly belly, no?
Wow! I'm married to you.
A little more of this, and a little less of... less of that.
Wow.
I think we've seen enough. So, Donnie, do you think you're ready to rejoin your lovely wife?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Donald, I'll be candid. If I had my way, you wouldn't even go before this board.
I don't know what I was thinking when I gave my wife an abscessizer as a gift.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
So next time you get her something truly nice, like a gym membership, perhaps.
Exactly. I mean, no. I wouldn't get it then.
I wouldn't get it then. I wouldn't get it then. Oh, please. Stupid, I just want to get out of here.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
Did I fool you?
Yeah.
I didn't fool them. Set up. Trick question. I'm out the door.
Work on the folding, Donnie.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Is there any hope? Can you get out of here?
One man got out. Arnold. He sent us this. Arnold's wife let him out of the doghouse. Not sure how he did it.
Hey, lunch!
Is it lunch?
What is this? Cheese pie?
And quiche.
And chai lattes
every night.
Express your feelings.
How do you even follow that up? That's classic. That's classic. I have never, ever said Bridget's mom looks hot in a swimsuit. Ever. Ever. I know better than that. We have opportunities to show love to our spouses all the time. But there's a challenge in that. And Bridget's going to share a little story about one of the times where in our life together, in our relationship, this kind of came to a head. And it really changed how we looked at one another.
So it came at the end of a week. Jason had traveled and then was working longer hours, and I was home with three kids, for the most part, the whole week by myself. I think it was a Thursday evening. I remember the random facts. And Jason came home and immediately went to sorting laundry, which was great. He's helping, love it. My idea was, okay, I haven't seen him all week. He's talking to me. So I remember sitting on the steps of the laundry room, and he was sorting, and we were talking. I don't even remember what we were talking about. It's funny how you don't even remember those big conversations at all years later. All that I remember is Jason suddenly slamming down a kid's shirt and saying, "Can you do something while you're sitting there?" And I was like, I can. In my mind, I was listening to you because I haven't seen you in 7 days.
And in my mind, I had been gone all week, and so I came home. And what was the best thing that I could do for Bridget? She had been home all week with the kids without any help. The best thing that I could do when I got home was help her to actually do something, to accomplish something. And what Bridget didn't share, because she's kind to me and gracious, is that my folding and my sorting got more and more aggressive. I don't know if you've ever done this before, but like it was like this, and then it was like this, and then it was like this. And it was more and more aggressive. And when I asked her to do something, it wasn't exactly like that. There were a few other words in that sentence that probably should not be said to your wife, and I would not recommend it at all. But have any of you guys ever felt like that? Have any of you ladies ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like you are doing something for your spouse, something for your partner, something for your fiance? You're doing something for them, and you don't understand why they aren't appreciating what you're doing for them. Have you ever felt like that before? I don't know. Or is it just me? Have you ever been doing something and you're thinking, man, if somebody did this for me, I would be like on cloud nine. This would be wonderful because this is exactly how I would want someone to treat me. But yet, when we do it for them, they don't seem to respond in the same way that we would respond. I think that's probably an issue if I ask for a raise of hands, which I won't, that we've probably all faced at some point where we think that we're doing something that adds value. We think that we're doing something to show respect. We think we're doing something to show love, to love on our spouse in a particular way. But they're not receiving it nearly as well as we thought they would. And we're so puzzled by this. Why aren't they as excited about it as I would have been if someone would have done that for me? Well, fortunately, the Lord doesn't leave us hanging with things like this. He talks to us about how we should interact with our spouse, and he talks to us about how we should interact with others. And we are called to love. You see, each of us, whether we acknowledge it or not, we have a need. We have a deep, deep-seated need for emotional love. We have a deep-seated need for someone to love us. And some of you remember that. You remember when you first got married and you were so thrilled. We talked about kind of the lovey-dovey eyes, holding hands all over the place. Oh, you're the best. No, you're the best. No, you're the best. No. You're way better than me. That, what happens? Where does that go? Some of you are in that phase right now. It's wonderful. It's bliss. You're dating. You're engaged. You're thinking about marriage. You're moving in that direction. Some of you are in the first 2 years, and you're still thinking, 1 or 2 years, you're still thinking, yeah, this is bliss. Everything's wonderful. I love her so much. I love him so much. But something happens, and that starts to fade a little. You see, that initial love emotion that we feel when we're dating or when we find the person that God has for us and we're getting excited about being married, that love really only lasts about a year or two. You're kind of riding the high. And then it changes because, as my friend Paul Goodnight says, dating is like your representative meets my representative, okay? And then once we say I do, the representatives leave. And that's what it's like. And then a year or two in, you're thinking, I don't have that same feeling. I don't have that same fill of emotion that I once had. Well, God calls us to love. We know that for sure. And if you've ever taken one of my parenting classes, you know this is one of my favorite verses because I'm a summary guy. I'm a give me the cliff notes, give me the bullet points. And you have all the instruction out of the Old Testament of how to live. 613-ish do's and don'ts from the Lord to his people. And one of the people, an Israelite, comes up to Jesus and says, a Jewish Pharisee comes up to Jesus and says, teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law? In other words, there's 613 things to do and not to do. Can you just break it down for me, Jesus? Give me the simple version. Give me the bullet point. Give me the PowerPoint version. And Jesus says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And then he goes on to say, this is the first and greatest commandment. The second one is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. So what Jesus is saying is the most important thing that you should do in life is love. Love how? Love as I love. That's the single most important thing to do. What should be the object of my love, Jesus? Number one, God. Number two, everyone else, your neighbor, everyone around you. And if you've heard me talk about this before, and we're not going to go there in the interest of time, but the Lord breaks it down for us. There's no one else that we're called to be one with other than our spouse. So obviously our spouse is really important, and I would argue that the scriptures are clear that they are tops on the list right below God, number two, a distant number two, but number two. So love God first, love your spouse. In fact, We have some clarity on this. For husbands, we read in Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. So we're directed to love our wives, husbands. Wives, you are directed to love and respect and honor your husbands. If you're heading in that direction, that's the trajectory you're on. That's what the Lord calls married couples to do. So let's go back to our dilemma. What's wrong with the picture? If we're loving how we would like to be loved and we're portraying or loving our spouse in that way, why aren't they receiving it so well? Well, this is where the scripture gives us guidelines, but doesn't give us specifics. And I think all truth is God's truth. So if you find something that is true, then it is God's truth. And even though this book is not my favorite book, I think it's a good book, and I've ranked books. I won't bore you with the details on that, but I think this is a good book. It's not as biblically grounded as I would like, but it's very practical, and it's called The Five Love Languages, and it's a guy by the name of Dr. Gary Chapman. And we're going to talk about some concerns about the book in a few minutes, but the premise is this, that the reason why we love people and they don't receive that love in the way that we intended is because we have different love languages. In other words, when we talk about emotional love, there are different ways that people like to be loved, receive love emotionally. And here's the challenge. The truth is we tend to love how we would want to be loved. Everybody nod. Okay? So if we know how we would like someone to love on us, our natural position is to love them that way. But there's two in this marriage relationship, and that person may not want to be loved in the same way you do. And therein lies the challenge, because we're being called to love their way. So Bridget's going to give you a little bit more detail about the five love languages as described by Dr. Chapman, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit more.
So this is just, excuse me, an example of love languages for Jason and I. We are polar opposites. Just even talking today, I went through and did this. I am the chicken scratch person. This is normally how I would come up. Totally random pieces, stuff hanging off of them, all of that.
Notes on back of receipts.
Napkins.
Napkins. Just that's how she goes up.
Which would normally make the hair on the back of Jason's neck stand straight up. And then I go out of order of what we talked about, which is so fun to watch him then stand there and be like, oh! But I'm behaving today. So I even did this so that he felt better that it was somewhat organized. Anyway, sorry, that's my digression. The five love languages. He says there's five primary love languages, and I just want to give you guys a brief overview of all of them. Physical touch, acts of service, receiving gifts, quality time, and words of affirmation. So I'll start with physical touch. If anybody sees me in the back, you see me with a baby typically. From a very young age, physical touch communicates love. It's tenderness. Young children, when they're hurt, when they're crying, when they need something, they will run to somebody, and you can give them a hug and a kiss, and they typically then run right back off. Holding hands, a pat on the back to somebody, your coworker, good job. Those all communicate support, encouragement, love. That's the primary. If you find yourself always putting an arm around somebody and wanting to hug on people and cuddle, that's probably one of your primary modes of communication for love and receiving love.
And Bridge, can I just add to that one a little bit? So what happened right there was about half the room said, ooh, that's me. Like, don't even go on to the others, because the guys are thinking that's sex and you don't even have to cover the other four, because if you love me, we're going to have sex. I love sex. Well, can you take that off the recording? No, men very much have a physical need. So let me draw a line of distinction here. So we're talking about emotional love, not physical love. For men, sex is a physical need. It is not. You need it because, and scientifically, you have hormones that build up within you. You have the fluids that build up within you, and you need to. And now I'm being very serious here, guys. It's a physical need. You have a buildup that you need to release. Okay, for a man. And that's a physical need. What we're talking about here is an emotional need. So we are not talking about sex. Physical touch, and for those of you guys that your love language is physical touch, male or female, you know what I mean. It just feels good to you to be close to someone. It may lead to sex. Absolutely. There's a possibility of that. But that's not what it is. We're talking that someone actually just needs to be touched, needs to be hugged, play with hair, hold hands, rub back, that sort of thing. So guys, don't check out and think, okay, that's my primary, and now we're moving on. We'll talk about what your language is because here's mine. Because that's not the case. Very few of you men, your love language is actually physical touch. And you'll know this because as you get into yours, if your love language isn't being met, even though you're a guy and you have a sex drive, you won't even be that interested. Because your emotional love is not being filled, and therefore your desire to have sex, or if you do it, she's more like an object to you because your emotional tank is not being filled. That's the distinction here, okay? I just want to be clear so you guys don't check out. Now she's going to go into the other four.
I, even having 7 kids, if I say the word sex, I turn bright red. So I had said to Jason, you need to take that part. Just caveating that. The second love language is acts of service. And this one, the old phrase, actions speak louder than words, rings true. If you like to do things for somebody, whether it's laundry, picking up around the house, running errands, doing the yard work, it's you. Your primary mode of communicating love is to do things for other people. And if you find yourself really frustrated when people don't do things for you, that's another sign that this might be one of your primary means of communicating. When you get frustrated that somebody is not doing stuff that you think they should be doing, that you've asked them to do, this might be your area. A little bit of a caveat. Some actions speak louder than others. You might both be acts of service, which would be crazy, but you might both be acts of service, but different acts. One of you might say, but this would be really important to me. So Jason is acts of service. I'll give you a short example. He is acts of service. He would love all acts to be done, like the house in total order, pristine, everything. That is not happening. So I have literally said to him, give me 2 things that if you saw done, you would know was me specifically doing them for you. And he literally said, our bedroom in order and the dishes cleaned at night. In my mind, I'm like, bedroom, who cares? Nobody sees that room. But literally that communicates in a place of peace for him. And he knows that if I do that, then that's literally me trying very hard to keep that room in order for him. So if you are acts of service, think about which services would actually communicate, because you don't want to say to them all of them. Yeah. Okay, because that's unrealistic.
Listen. Some of you sick and twisted people take off your clothes and just throw them on the floor in piles and don't put them in the laundry hamper, okay? So
I love you people.
Just throw that out there.
The next one is receiving gifts. This one, if I don't do a good job explaining, I literally ranked a 0 on, like 0. This means nothing to me. But I think it's also the one that's the most self-explanatory. You love to give people things. It doesn't have to be expensive. The thoughtfulness part of it, to make things for people, to do things, something that you really spend a lot of time and effort into knowing that person in order to provide them the right gift. And then, therefore, you also like to receive them. One of our children's is gifts, and it scares the heck out of us because neither of us think like that. So that's, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't have to be expensive, just thoughtful and showing that you really know that person. It can be handmade even. Quality time. This is not quantity time, but quality time. Okay, this is undivided attention, one-on-one, conversation. So this is my piece. And I always say to Jason, I don't need to spend 24/7, but if I have 15 minutes with you and you share your heart, share something that God's laid on your heart, share something that really made you laugh, share a little piece of you, that fills me for a long time. because it's the quality that I feel like I'm walking away knowing a little bit more about you than I did before. Things not to do if you are not this person, don't say, hey, let's sit down and spend time watching TV together. It means nothing because you've not shared anything. So you want to think about the activities to do, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's just sitting down and having a conversation. It's something intentional for that person, showing them, looking them in the eyes, doing a new activity together. You don't have to just sit and stare at each other. You can do something fun, but just that you're showing that you're growing together. And the last one is words of affirmation. And this one is where you like to be verbally affirmed. Verbally appreciated. Thank you for taking out the laundry, or taking out the garbage. Thank you for doing the laundry. Sometimes it's the same in our house. Words of encouragement, but you want to be careful here too. If this is your spouse, the tone is just as important as what you say. If you say thanks in a haphazard way, that's going to be a lot more cutting than it is encouraging. You want to show genuine appreciation. To this person, notes and cards would speak volumes. Take a little, hey, I really liked when you did this. I love when you wake up early in the morning and say goodbye to me if one leaves earlier than the others. Big no's for this one are sarcasm, criticism, and nagging. Sarcasm, you might be intending it to be really funny, but if it's somebody who is very, feels very strongly about what words you use, sarcasm is very cutting. And hurts very deeply. So nagging to wives, I'll go there. Don't. That's it, just stop. But sincerely, those are the main framework. I think for Jason, they just miss organization. That would be his only, really. But God has a great sense of humor and gave him me to purposely. So just to share with you guys, I told them I would only share a couple stories. But our garage is his zone, and it is all clear Tupperware with labels. I have been known on occasion to go in and like take the things out of one Tupperware and put them in the, like switch things. So they're not in, he can, I always say, you can see what's in there. Why do you need both the labels and the clear Tupperware? And I purposely move them around, and he gets so mad, and I laugh. And then I have to organize another room or something to make up for it. But
when we were dating in college, she would, I was an RA, so I had a special key, and she borrowed the key sometimes. And she would key into my room and just take all the picture frames and just turn them about 40 degrees.
45 degrees.
As soon as I walked in, it was like, you know, the shiver went over me because things weren't where they were supposed to be. So.
And he would walk around and turn them all back and tell me I have issues.
So we're not doing a couple spotlight this week because we wanted you guys to get to know us a little bit better. So if you haven't figured it out, Bridget is quality time, as she mentioned, and I am acts of service. And Bridget brought this up, so I want to highlight it. It's very rare, actually, that couples have the same, what's called primary love language, your top one. And you might have two that are near the top and tied, but it's very, very rare. And that Bridget and I actually share the same bottom one, which is helpful because we both, gifts really, if I never got a birthday gift, it wouldn't faze me. Some of you, like, that's terrible to you. But I think that you don't label stuff as terrible, so it's okay. But gifts for Bridget and I don't mean much. The other note is if you're trying to figure out what your spouse's love language is, oftentimes their most regular criticism of you is in the area of their love language. So sometimes you can figure it out that way as well. Okay, more foundational than sidebar note on this book. I'm going to give away a couple copies at the end before we leave. But there's a couple major points that I think Chapman misses. And like I said, this is not a Christian book per se. I think it has some truth in it. But it does miss the mark in a couple areas. And the one is that he does key on the idea that loving your spouse is a daily decision, which it is. It's a daily decision to love your spouse. But the greatest love that we're going to receive is from Christ. The greatest love is what we talked about in the gospel. And I would argue, he talks about this idea of a love tank, and basically your spouse either fills your love tank or takes withdrawals from your love tank. And I would argue that about, if I could put a percentage on it, 98, 99% of my love tank is filled by a Lord that died on the cross for me. What Bridget does for me is just icing on the cake. And that's why you see when couples that aren't followers of Christ, that they struggle so much, because everything, if everything was dependent on my bride, everything, if my entire life, everything that I got emotionally was depending on my wife, it would be a huge problem. And Bridget wanted to speak to that as well.
So to those of you who can relate to this, early on in our marriage, I was just becoming a believer, at home with young kids, and didn't really like moving to this area. No offense, women. I didn't like any women when we first moved down here, and was very lonely. I'm totally an extrovert. And that was a dark period in our marriage, because when Jason came home, I expected him to be my all in all. I expected him to socially be everything to me, emotionally, spiritually. I expected him to fill all of that role. And what that caused was us to be further apart than we ever have been. The difference being, if what he just said, that I can't expect him to fill everything in me. I need to be filled by God in order to be able to love my husband as God calls us to love. And the only other flip thing that I would want to say is to counter culturally that it's a 50-50. Marriage isn't 50-50. It's not a, you fill my love tank, I'll fill yours. It's not, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. It's even when Jason's in the throes of a really rough time and struggling spiritually, God gives me the grace to love him through it. And to cover that, like scripture said, love covers sin. And to do those things, when I'm struggling, Jason has the grace to be able to love me. And that has been game-changing for us. So we want you guys to look at these today, these love language. These are just tools. This isn't the Bible. These are practical things that can speak to the daily life, but it's built on the foundation of knowing that you have a Savior who died on the cross. That's the core. That's what changes your marriage. This is just practical stuff that can make the day-to-day stuff not as conflicting, not as much of hopefully a battleground as it needs to be.
The scriptures tell us that we are supposed to love in the way that Christ loved. And then elsewhere we're told that there is no greater love than this, out of the Gospel of John, that a man would give up his life for another. And that's exactly what Christ did for us in giving up his life for us on the cross. And when we're called to love, we're called to love in that way, as Bridget just said, to give within our marriage. And all of you have the opportunity today to understand your spouse, understand your partner, understand the person you're dating, the person you're engaged to that much better, and say, I'm going to choose today to love them in the way that they want to be loved, and love them unconditionally, love them without expecting anything in response. Not a vending machine love. I put in my quarter and I get a Twinkie. Okay, it's I'm just going to put in. I'm just going to give, because that's what Christ did on the cross. He just gave without asking anything in return. Could you imagine what would happen if we walked away and said, we're going to love our spouse the way they want to be loved today? Instead of saying, I'm just going to continue because this is obviously the right way to love because that's how I want to be loved. That's oftentimes the mindset we have. If we said, I'm going to forget about me and I'm going to say, what makes her feel most love? What makes him feel most love? And we just started taking the little steps today to invest in them. You know, when I hear couples come in for counseling, oftentimes it's, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're not doing this. I gave him a list of things to do. He doesn't do it. I gave her a list of things to do. She's not doing it. But the question is, the things that are within your control, which, by the way, we're going to talk about in the next series on boundaries, the things that are within your control, are you doing everything that you can? Are you giving 100% of what's within your control and being fueled by the love of Christ that he demonstrated on the cross? Because I tell you what, you show me a man who's being loved by his bride in the way that Christ loved the church, and I'll show you a happy man. You show me a woman that's being loved by her husband the way that Christ loved us on the cross, I'll show you a happy woman. Because that's what's within their control. And you have an opportunity to do that. Let's pray. Father, thank you for reminding us that we have a tendency, Lord, to love people the way we want to be loved, but that's not often the way that they want to be loved. Lord, help us to love our our fiance, the person that we're dating, our spouse. Help us to love them the way they desire to be loved. And Lord, you give us the perfect model for that on the cross. Lord, thank you for the great gift that you gave us, demonstrating the greatest love of all on the cross. Father, we praise your name, and we ask that you empower us, equip us, and work through us to accomplish the task at hand. Amen.